Hello and welcome to the first episode of Lincoln Cast. I'm here with Shav of the World, Dragania, and Tarkin. And this is, of course, self-confessed cynic, one of the three guild leaders of the Giant Bomb Guild, Lincoln Force. So in today's episode, we're just going to be talking about the beta as experienced so far. Talking about character creation, starting areas, experiences, and just, you know, any issues we had or general conclusions towards the end there. You're probably going to expect this to be about 20 minutes to an hour, so maybe something along those lines, but we have no real firm targets. We're just going to be doing this organically. So buckle in. I'll let you all introduce yourselves and maybe even talk about what your first character is or what you played. So Shav?
Hi. Shall I talk about my Guild Wars 1 experience?
Sure.
Maybe So I've played a little bit of Guild Wars 1. It's kind of like my only real MMO experience before coming into Guild Wars 2. And I played that as a Ranger. Really hated Rangers. So this time I'm rolling a Necromancer. Going as a Char Necro, which is probably an interesting combination. But I just thought, why not? Because I like cats. that's pretty much the only reason why I chose that. Plus, they have a cool run animation, which is always good.
Oh, dude, yeah, totally. They run all the way awesome. And when they're in the running animation, you hit... Anyway, we'll get to that later.
We'll get to more of that later.
How long did you play Guild Wars 1 for?
How long did I play Guild Wars 1? I played most of it basically two-player. So it was just me and my cousin used to chill out and do all co-op. Single-player only. Never done any PvP or anything like that.
Right.
Probably put 100, 200 hours into Guild Wars 1 just doing PvE stuff. So, yeah.
Cool. And so I'll move on to Dragania. You want to introduce yourself?
Hello. Hi, I'm Drag. So I've been playing Guild Wars for a while now, on and off for the last 2 or 3 years, but for about 3 years before that, I played that as my main game, and my only real MMO as well. I play with self-confessed cynic and Tarkin. We were all a guild, so it was like my best gaming experience. So, anyway, so I was a mesmer then, so naturally I'm a mesmer here because mesmers are the only real, you know, class. And yeah, I'm snubbing the rest of you guys.
Great, sure, or already controversial. I like it.
Yeah,
it's good. that's cool. So essentially, me and Drag played together for a long time. We knew each other from a while back, about 10 years now. So we played Guild Wars 1 together for about 4 to 6 years, almost. Mm. And now we've moved on to Guild Wars 2, and I'm happy to have him on. He's not really part of the Giant Bomb Guild at the moment, but I know him in person, so please don't criticize him too much. I know he's a bit of a jerk, but leave him there. Leave him be. I like him the way he is. Well, not really, but anyway. Tarkin, if you want to introduce yourself now, it'd be great.
All right. I've been playing RPGs. I primarily play RPGs. And so, along with Dragania and Self-Confessed Cynic, we play Guild Wars. I've probably been playing the longest out of all us. Guild did die out after we lost...
Oh, yeah. After the first couple of years, then, yeah.
After about 3 years, we lost interest... But I continued playing.
So what did you play back in Guild Wars?
I played a warrior.
I can't remember.
Primarily a warrior.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that was Kale Ironfist, was it?
Yes, it was.
Kale Ironfist.
Cool beans. All right, just to clarify, these guys are, you can find us on the Giant Bomb forums. I'm Self-Confessed Cynic. Shav the World is Shav the World, Dragania is Dragania, and Tarkin is Tarkin. So these aren't just pseudonyms we're using here, these are also our Giant Bomb names. So you can hit us up in there if you have any further questions about our beta impressions. But we're moving on to our first point of interest, which would be character creation. I'll let you guys talk first, so if anyone wants to start.
Look, I think character creation is very interesting this time around compared to a Guild Wars, because it's... I'm not sure if who here has played it, but the first thing you notice is a lot more customizable.
I would agree.
Like, the Well, apart from the facial stuff, you know, as technology grows, you know, the facial changes and the actual physical changes are a lot different, and that's to be expected. But I like the fact that you can now choose the colors of your armor before you actually get into the game, which is really, yeah. really cool.
Absolutely. And then for those who couldn't sadly get into the beta, what are you talking about? Essentially, towards the end of the character creation process, you have pretty much for each piece of armor, you have 2 to 3 dye channels. I think they've actually discussed this on the official blog, so you can hit that up for more information on the specifics. But essentially, for each piece of armor, you can choose the primary color, which would be most of the armor, then secondary and third color as well. And you can see, you can essentially program how you want the armor to be colored for when you start the game. And that actually transfers over, well, is supposed to transfer over between armors. And you'll see that happening. It's a bit buggy at the moment, so it doesn't work all the time. But you do get to see the same color choices you made when first character creating through all the armors you used inside the beta. And obviously you can change the colors on the fly from the die set they give you to start with. I think you're not 100% sure on this, but I believe you'll have an expanded die set in-game. But yeah, it's a really great piece of kit. You essentially have that deep a customization, even down to like face sliders that I think people have heard before. Nose sliders, so another great example from today's horn sliders.
Yep, that was the first thing I found, and the slider I basically just whacked up to max, because who doesn't need more horns?
Oh. turn a phrase. But yeah, for the char, you have a horn slider. So essentially you can make big horns or tiny little itty bitty horns. Well, not really. I think the actual sliders themselves I found to be good, but not amazing. Like you can't really shrink them down to have micro horns, for example.
I think it depends which horns you start with as well.
Yeah, and same for height. Like, for me, for example, my first character was a Norn, and I essentially made a jolly fat man, pretty much as close to Santa as I could get. It was a big, white, bushy beard, short for a Norn, like minimum height, and as wide as I could make the character model look, and I've dressed him in red. I don't think any of you have seen him. But anyway, you don't actually have too much, same with the first girls, you actually don't have too much to work with in terms of maximum height and minimum height. Do you guys have any thoughts on overall character creation along those deeper lines?
I think it's a good thing that you can't really go above you know, maximum minimum bit, because that's a PvP competitive issue, because you'll have, you know, the smaller you make your character, the less likely they'll be able to, you know, spot you and select you. Yes,
but then you have the Asura.
Yeah, I know. The Asuras a bit. I mean, Asuras are not. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Asuras are in the game right now.
No, they're not.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how to judge that. I can see it causing problems though, but when it comes out, we'll see.
No, I think the whole height being limited thing is more of a sort of lore aspect, because you don't want to have really, really tiny char for no apparent reason. You know, they generally, it's just like in real life, humans generally are between, you know, 4 foot and 7 foot. You know, you're not going to randomly find a 9 foot tall human.
Well, so. Midgets exist.
yeah, that's why I said.
Say it, this game is clearly discriminatory towards midgets.
Yeah, why is there a midget toggle? That's what I want in the next
toggle. All you need is a checkbox that says midget.
if you look at their design documentation or what they've talked with the press, Irina has consistently talked about, every time they've brought up on the subject, they don't want it to be too immersion-breaking when you see other characters in the world. And they've made a lot of their design decisions, as you guys have rightly pointed out, to limit it to what makes sense. What they think makes sense, anyway, in the world.
That's fair enough.
I guess it's fair. Like, it's makes, like, I can see why you don't want purple humans running around, for example. Aside from their clothing, obviously. But yeah, it works. And even though I want to make an itty bitty Norn, with a giant sword, or as big a sword as I can give it, I'm pretty happy with what they gave us in this beta. Like, to be like, yeah. All these little like things we're bringing up are a bit nitpicky. Like, in the end, it actually delivered quite an extensive and really impressive as far as MMOs go. I'm not sure. I didn't actually play too much of WoW, but I remember not being very impressed with my 10 hours in terms of how I felt the character was customizable. Mm. Again, that was quite a while ago, and I only really touched on it. So,
for people who have played Dragon Age, I think the character physical customization, anyway, the beginning is very, very similar to Dragon Age's. So yeah, if you're
Some extent, Skyrim. Yeah, you actually do have
Skyrim. I know.
But well, it's definitely not as ultra real. Like, you're definitely working with something that's cartoonized or with a certain level of art style to it. But you do have essentially the same sliders. No, Skyrim has more, but you have somewhat of an idea of what you're working with if you've experienced Skyrim. The main thing that they're lacking, though, is randomization and presets.
Well, maybe they'll be in the next game, but I mean the full game rather.
I would hope so.
I'm also interested in I'm not sure how things went on other classes, because I've only made a mesmer. But after you do the face thing and the head thing and the size thing, they start asking you questions like
Definitely.
Like one of them was something like along the lines of, how do you like attack your foes or something? Do you attack them from like the shadows, or do you keep a like, how do you look at the world? You know, do you keep a grin on your face all the time or something like that? I'm not sure what they have. Yeah, well, I mean, mesmers, come on, clowns.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It was like a tragic one, or like a funny one, or like a scary one, I think.
Oh, the faces,
Faces, basically. Yeah. So I don't know. Do those actually have an impact on the gameplay?
It impacts your personal storyline.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's something similar for necromancers. You've got similar face masks. One's a skull, one's like a demon face, and one's... And that's just like...
The third one.
That affects one.
Across the eyes. It's across the eyes. It's a little blue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Those seem to... Those are determine, like, what armor piece, like, headpiece you get for your character to start with, and I don't know what attributes they actually give you, so...
Yeah, so I haven't hit level 11 yet, so I'm very, very hazy on the traits right now.
Yeah, well, we'll get into that a bit on... Yeah. But, just on that point, I think... Because, for me, I wanted to be a charming gnome. And so I picked charming for... Because, just to give you a run through, all the classes generally have about 6 to 8 questions? I can't really remember, but around that kind of amount of questions you get after you... determine the physical characteristics of the character you're making. So they generally start off with questions that are a bit cerebral. Not really, they're a bit obvious. But they essentially go in, oh, how would you approach this situation? Or what is your opinion on this? Or, hey, these are 3 possible backstories for your character. Very much in the vein of old RPGs, or, and for a more recent example that I've used before, Mass Effect. You generally go, okay, this is, was your person in a war a while ago, or was he a hero in battle and well known? You start with that, and then by the end of it, you also pick what your personality will be. So I think the 3 are nobility, charm, and what was the other? Can anyone spot me on that one?
Sorry?
Ferocity.
Charm, yes. Dignity, ferocity. And...
Yeah, dignity, charm, and ferocity.
Ferocity.
So, essentially, what that should translate into is how your character performs in terms of how he acts between himself and other NPCs during cutscenes. So, in the cutscenes, which we may get into today, where you have one character talking to another up in the screen, and in many cases can make dialogue choices within there, you should have... choices dependent on what you picked in character creation. Now, I'm not sure if everything's in there at the moment. I picked a char, and I went for ferocity. That makes sense. And obviously, every time I had a conversation, ferocity came up, Maybe Dignity came up, but I never saw Charm. I'm not sure if that's because Charm's never written. Has anyone else seen that? Has anyone else noticed what choices they've been given?
I saw all three once.
Okay.
And I chose Dignity.
Right.
So I'm not sure whether that's because of the choice I made or because
they haven't finished writing yet.
It was just a particular choice.
I think the trees are based off of your personality.
Yeah.
And so if you favor too much of one, you might only just get the one choice. But some trees don't have that restriction.
Okay, so we're kind of guessing here. It would make sense. Like, that's how I would think it would work. Like, where you start making choices towards the beginning of the game and towards the end, they'll be able to narrow it down to what they think you'd choose in that situation. Is that what you're getting at here?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it could make sense. And essentially, that's what Mass Effect does as well, in a bit more deeper way.
The fact that we're kind of like guessing at this stuff here kind of makes me feel that, you know, the choices that you have to make at the beginning. When I was making them, I was kind of nervous to commit to any one choice because they make you make all these choices up front and they don't really like give you any indication of what kind of effect that's going to have. Like,
I absolutely agree.
There's
also
being said about the mask
the fact
stuff,
that we're even questioning
what
the first
real
place.
Effect. Is it just going to change gameplay? Is it going to change my story? You know, is it actually going to make a really significant difference? Or
yeah,
it's kind of it could be conveyed a little better, maybe.
I very much agree, and I think nothing is on there as to really explain it. Like, they want it to be a very streamlined, beautiful experience, and during this entire time, you're answering questions. There's all these pretty backgrounds and all that kind of stuff during it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they never really say, okay, this is going to restrict what you can do in the future, or you are not beholden to this in the future, or any form of thing like that. They pretty much just say it and then let you go, and then hopefully some of us can get a decent idea after maybe some testing or talking to the devs of what is actually happening behind the scenes. But at the moment, don't know.
I don't want to jump ahead too far, but I mean, looking to the play when we were playing earlier, the only thing we really saw that was different between our personal stories when we were all playing as Charles was that because I was in Blood Legion, I had a different first few quests than you had in Iron Legion, was it?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, yeah. But otherwise,
it
all seemed...
Yeah, all
between
seemed
the two of you, both in Iron Legion, it was identical.
Yeah,
So I assume you guys didn't, as Char, you guys didn't get the, were you grown, you know, were you raised by nobility, orphan, or whatever? You didn't get those
questions? Oh, no, yeah.
No, each race gets a different choice.
Mm.
Yeah. So as humans, we get, like, were you raised by nobility or...
On the streets.
You're an orphan or on the streets or something like that, yeah. So,
yeah,
from what I gather, I got a set slightly different quest to people who would have chosen differently. I had, like, a nobleman quest to begin with.
So this makes a perfect transition into the next part of the discussion. So that was character creation, and you can probably hit us up again on the Japan forums or check out the many YouTube videos made by people other than us about that. But we're going to move on to the starting areas and what our first experiences are with Guild Wars 2. Simon, you can continue your point. How do you find the starting areas? What do you start off with, just to remind the audience and us, and how do you like it?
Well, to be honest, the initial starting area, it's not too helpful. I'm not sure if I just missed all the tutorials or something, but I didn't find that there was any real tutorial to speak with.
They kind of just leave you there and just go have fun.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So basically we start off... we started off as a human. I started off defending the town from, like, bandits or something.
Centaurs.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, nothing really dangerous. It was pretty simple. The main thing coming from as a Guild Wars 1 player, the main thing that I first noticed is that there is no auto attack. Your first skill,
yeah,
is your auto attack, and I found that to be honest, I hadn't really kept in touch with, you know, Guild Wars skills and traits and all that sort of stuff outside,
mm-hmm.
So I was very surprised at that. Anyway, it was also another annoying thing I found was, I'm not sure if I just haven't figured it out yet. Is there a way to actually move up to a person automatically attack, get into attack range?
I was wondering this as well.
I haven't been able to see any way in there. Because the first Guild Wars, you essentially, they just have an auto attack. But mainly...
Yeah, basically a tracking mechanism, basically.
Yeah, if you select an enemy character and you hit any of the skills in your hotbar, you would automatically move to a distance that would enable you to at least start using one of those skills while in, whilst in range. So in the case of melee, if you hit the first skill on your skill bar, just for example, a melee attack, you'd run up to the character and hit him. In this one, they're aiming for a more, adventure game, no, it wouldn't be adventure, action gamey kind of feel. What ends up happening in many cases is you can't really tell, there's too many particle effects going on, you can't really tell how far away you are from the enemy. You hit the attack button, it says miss, 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 and then you have to jigger around or just abandon that enemy in general.
Well, what happens so is even worse is...
Yeah, basically, you aim at them. Yeah, you think?
Sorry, it was even worse is you hit the attack button, there's so many particle effects going on that you don't even know you've missed.
Yeah.
And then you have a 40-second cooldown and haven't actually done anything, now can't use that skill for 40 seconds.
But exactly. what you have to realize is that it's very much in line with all the other MMOs. All other MMOs. Especially World of Warcraft is the biggest one there. It has a very similar system. If you're not within range, you miss.
Yeah, I'm not sure I like that.
Yes, it's very jarring for us Guild Wars 1 players because
we
are so used to automatically tracking.
Yeah.
So now...
And it's not that we're asking for an auto attack. It's not that at all. It's that if you're hitting a skill and you are indicating that you want your character to do the skill on a particular enemy, at least that first step of automatically moving you into range would be incredibly useful. But
maybe just a better signifier of whether or not you're in range before you cast
before,
it.
Yeah,
like some sort of ring around you when you mouse over the skill, or well, it's kind of hard to do if you're using the hotkeys, but maybe.
Or maybe just the cursor color itself.
There actually is an indicator that you're not in range.
Is there?
There is. It's very subtle. Below the skill is your skill. Is the skill number?
Yeah.
If that's red, you're not in range.
Really?
Yes.
I did not notice this.
I had wondered what that meant. I'd seen it, but I had no idea what it meant.
Yeah, because I only know some... So just to clarify for people who don't know, I absolutely have no idea. Guild Wars 2 is based on a 10-skill bar. 10-skill system. Essentially, you have 10 skills running at the bottom of your screen. Under each skill, you have the hotkey for that, and the default is the numbers 1 to 10. You have the basic number, if it doesn't do anything except what it says in the face. You have a number with the targeting symbol behind it, if it's a targeted skill. So those would involve directing either a little crosshair on the ground or by some other means, and actually selecting where on the ground for you that you want the skill to activate. And obviously now apparently it's color coded. I had no idea. To be honest, but we're getting.
The only reason I noticed was because I switched from a melee to a ranged character.
Oh yeah.
And noticed that. My range attacks were out of range when they were red.
Right. Mm. Jeez, I should really be paying attention. I know, because I think they did their job really well. Like I found myself, because one of the aims they said they had was to have players watching the action more. That's part of the reason why they're having this terrible situation of everything having a gigantic effect attached to it. Like even summoning a creature has huge circles opening up in the ground and a creature clawing it up from below when you could have just had them, quite honestly, you could have just had them appear and not disturb everyone else's gameplay that much. But anyway, so what they wanted people to do is watch the screen. And so I've been watching the enemy and trying to click on them and trying to move into distance and not being paying attention to the hot bar at the bottom. So that's part of, I think they did the job well in some cases, I guess. Thoughts?
Yeah.
It's a polish game for me. Some of the other issues I had were, you know, in regards to like technical issues. Apparently I'm the only one who's had this.
Which is
out of us four anyway.
Oh, out of us four, yeah.
Yeah. So I had a few problems logging in. There was a lot of lag as well.
Oh right. So yeah, we may as well just naturally move to that. All right. So logging in issues. A lot of people have been having them. A couple of guys in the Mumble server, the Jamba Mumble server with us, haven't been able to log in at all for this entire beta weekend. And I have to say, I'm apologetic towards them. I'm still happy that I didn't have any problems myself. So, haha. But no, in many cases, I think both of you, Dragania and Chav, had problems, was it?
Yeah, I've only had mild-ish problems. personally. No. Wouldn't let me log in initially because of the overload on the login servers. But once I got in, it was fine, except it booted me pretty quickly. But then I just logged straight back in and carried on.
Right. And then Jugania, you couldn't... You had to make
I couldn't join a world. I couldn't join Yak's Bend.
Yeah, which is where we are.
Which all our guildies are on, apparently. And so I didn't end up joining Kainan by accident. Oh, not by accident. I was doing an experiment where I'm like, oh, can't join this one. Maybe I can't join anything. But it turns out it was just Yak's Bend that was acting up for me. So now I have to pay a whole bunch of stuff to actually switch worlds.
Oh, well, you're given that for free. But yeah, the idea is you have to pay in-game gems to be able to switch worlds. Yeah.
Which I have no idea. How do I get gems? I don't know where they go.
They give you 2,000 out of the butt, I think. And I think it was...
Really?
Yeah. Okay. There's an icon in the top left corner of the screen. There's a whole row of them where you get your mail and stuff. And one of them is in the shape of a gem, which opens up the gem store. And then you click try buying anything or try adding gems. And it'll say, like, redeem 2,000 free gems.
Okay, cool. As you can see, these guys have been, been playing the game and been a lot more observant than I am.
Oh, man.
Part of the problem was also that Yak's Bend was quite popular as a server.
Yeah.
That's just because, like, we found that the servers with the funny names, they were the popular ones.
I thought they'd be the ones with the cool names.
I thought that. But apparently not.
Like, Sorrow's Furnace was like, Sorrow's Furnace was low when I tried to make him my character in Yak's Bend the first time through. But Yak's Bend was medium.
When I made a character, all the American servers were low. And then half the European servers were medium, and then there were like four European servers at the bottom, all on high.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm not sure if they were split up that way. I think the ones at the bottom were just... I think it was just ordered by low, and then increasing.
To try and make people join the lower ones, obviously.
Yeah, which was a good idea, but it didn't work. I'm sorry, ReinaNet, but, you know. But I think that our fears weren't really too justified. Like, the first day was a bit of a cluster, but but after that, like, after about
well, I think now, because all the Americans are asleep,
it's been a lot better.
Technically, so should we, but we're not.
Well, yeah, it's what, 12:33 a.m. here in Sydney, Australia.
I'm interested in hearing what you guys think about the overall difficulty of the first level. Like, what about the variety of the first couple of quests?
Oh, thank you. So bring it back into points, because we kind of just went into gripes there for a second. We're going to talk about the starting character creation and now the starting areas. So for the first section, who wants to start for it? So Dragani regaled us with his saving the noble quest. Oh, you can tell us a bit more about Dragani.
Well, basically it was pretty straightforward.
The human starting area.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know... Yeah, so basically there was this, basically I had to save a bunch of people, went to one of my friends who was a noble, which is why I assumed that if you chose like an orphan or like raised on the streets, you wouldn't have gotten this quest. And then a party down with them, and then someone got kidnapped. It was very straightforward. It was nothing too difficult as well. I think I actually started dying until well after the first couple of quests.
Yeah.
There's nothing really difficult.
Right.
I think they were pretty good in terms of kind of easing you into the game. But like I said, there's no real tutorial, so you sort of have to figure things out yourself. But you know, luckily it's not too hard. They don't bombard you with like a billion skills at once. So you start off with what, like five skills that you can't change or anything or something like that.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you start off with...
You literally start the game with two skills. Your attack skill and your healing skill.
And your heal skill, yeah.
But yeah, you get past like level 1 pretty quickly.
Yeah.
From level 3 onwards, it becomes like more... You know, the leveling up process is a bit slower, but the first couple of levels are very quick.
It's a pretty good system.
I think that's probably because you're moving so quickly as well.
Yeah, for those not aware, in Guild Wars 2, the first five... You have 10 skills. The first five skills in your bar are decided by the weapons that are in your hand. The second five skills are utility skills and a heal and an elite. The elite, we haven't been able to play with in the beta because it's actually locked off for level 30s and above, and none of us have gotten that far, if we can. So essentially you have five skills, and they start you off with, I think, only one weapon and mainly just in one hand. So you have three possible skills to unlock as soon as you get into the game, one of which is unlocked for you. So, and that's your auto attack, essentially. So you run up to dudes, you hit them with the auto attack, and the more you use the weapon, the you slowly charge up the next skill and then the final skill, or if it's a fire. Anyway, so you charge up the next skills you need. So essentially, you start off with one skill, and by the time you hit maybe level 3, you have all the skills available to you. I think it was?
Yeah. Mm. It's actually based off of how many kills you get.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Although I'm not 100% sure. See, I didn't actually equip a offhand until about level 4-ish. And then
yeah, because you just didn't find them. Like, they didn't give us a lot of hand.
Yeah, after I equipped them, then I had to unlock the skills. So I'm not sure if it's like you unlock them automatically, or after you equip them, then you have to like kill.
It's the second.
You have to equip them and then kill enemies while it's equipped.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, because for me, I'll get into that later. So Vincent, you also Tarkeen. You also started in the human area, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I played a human guardian.
Mm-hmm. Just tell us about what you felt about. What did you do?
First off, you start off in a village that is being attacked by centaurs. You successfully defend it. Obviously.
Gotcha.
There's pretty much no way to fail at that point.
Okay, go on.
And basically, after the prologue, you actually enter the game.
Yeah, that's proper. Yeah, actually start. Yeah.
And
they don't dub you in Divinity's Reach, though, do they?
No, they dub you just outside Divinity's Reach.
Right.
So, if you move forward, you're actually moving away from the major city. And I didn't realize this. So I just kept going on and on. And because this is the first day, straight out, there's like hundreds and hundreds of people. And I couldn't get much of the dynamic events done. Because more people means more contribution is needed. And there's only many enemies or items to pick up or whatever.
Yeah.
So you have to work a lot harder. But because there's also more people, overall, everyone has to work harder.
Yeah, it's an interesting scaling system. And I have the same problem myself. Like so just to give people, again, an idea. So with the dynamic event system, which is what replaces quests in Guild Wars 2, you generally have quests or objectives. You don't really get a quest. You get an objective. You're walking through the world. An objective opens up in somewhere near you, like you hear a farmer screaming about his farm, and you run over there and you start doing whatever you need to do, like putting out fires, for example. So the more these are made to scale, so the more people actually participating in it, either the more difficult it becomes, or there just becomes more stuff to do. But they only built it to scale so far, and the fact that everyone started this about the same time, for the start of the beta, about 12 o'clock Friday Eastern, I think it was. Western. And so you had hundreds of people starting at the same time doing the same first couple of dynamic events. And that pretty much screwed over those, because you'd have 100 people doing an event instead of about 4 or 5, which is generally what they're designed for. And you'd have instances, like for me, for example, there was a cave full of Grawl carvings I had to rub off. And Grawl themselves I had to kill. And so there's about 50 people packed into this little cave, about the size of what you expect to be explorable for about 5. And the Grawl carvings would have to be rubbed off, but they'd be rubbed off by someone else and have to go up to them, and I'd have to rub it off or wait for it to respawn, then rub it off, then wait for it to respawn again. So you have a bunch of people circling the outside of the cave, literally for about 15 minutes, waiting for these little carvings to respawn to be rubbed off again. Like, that's the kind of problem we're having when we first started the beta. Has anyone else experienced anything similar?
Outside, what am I... Not real problems like that, per se, but everything outside Divinity's Reach, one of the randoms, like, side quests there, and you get the random area quests, they are all, for pretty much 12 hours, they were all clusterfucks. Like, they could be done.
Yeah.
Like, they could be done, but there was just a lot of people. As soon as one enemy is spawned, like, about 10 people would pounce on them.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really, like, any sort of a challenge or anything.
But you
like
had a
that.
Good, you had a good results of that. Like, for when you start off as Norn, there's the four, you start in the starting area, and there's four little big side quests or dynamic events to be part of, and those are the attributed to the four, like, not really deities, but things that the norm is associated with. So you have the leopard, the, I think it was a raven or crow, bear, and wolf. For the snow leopard one, essentially, you walk up to a dude and he turns you into a leopard, and then you have to use leopard skills like pounce to take out enemies in the area. So you had all these, like, about 50 leopards in a small little area. It would be about, in-game time, maybe 30 seconds to walk from one side of the, at leopard speed, of course, to walk from one side of the area to the other in a big circle. So you had 50 leopards just running, like, pouncing. And the pounce was a bit ludicrous. Like, you could go way further than an actual leopard could, like 15 feet, if you imagine the size of a leopard. So you had, like, an enemy spawn, they kind of just spawn out of nowhere, and then 15 leopards just pounce on it, and they just rip it to shreds, and then, like, disperse looking for the next enemy to come. And it was absolutely humorous. I loved it for the first about 10 minutes before I realized, wait, I'm not even close to finishing this as my objective. I had to kill, like, 8 other enemies, and I had to prowl that area for ages just to get that done. So,
I found that really weird that both the human and Norn starting areas had this problem, because I didn't feel like that at all starting in the Char area.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. How did you feel through with your Char playthrough? Because most of the events I took part in straight away, like, most of them were either kill this wave of enemies or just grab a few things and put them in a thing.
Yeah.
And it was more than enough stuff around to help out with that stuff.
I agree, but. Yeah, so we played a Char, pretty much a run through. I think it was, we went from level 1 to around level 9-ish, level 10-ish, maybe a bit further. In one big stretch was me and Tarkin. We loved it. But the main thing was, yeah, you started off and there was barely anyone there. We got on in Australian time about noon, so it would be a bit after midnight US. No, it would be a bit before midnight. Anyway. It would be well after release. Yeah, well after release, quite a few hours after release. So I think that was the main modifier, because we jumped on and most of the people would be asleep or just disinterested by that point, or just sick of how many service issues some of them have been having. And we got on, it was barely anyone there. We had a beautiful time running around as Char, killing things.
Yeah,
it wasn't a problem. But you had the same kind of thing?
I had the same thing pretty much 2 hours after launch, official launch time. It was pretty busy. I think what it was, actually, I know exactly why it wasn't a problem. It was because I got put in a server queue. I wasn't in the main server. I was in another instance of the start. Yeah, the overflow.
Yeah.
And the thing is, all the people in the overflow didn't understand what the overflow quite was, and neither did I. And so when I was trying to do my main story quest and get into the Black Citadel, we all run over to the gate, and then everyone was just standing by the gate, being so now what? And then I had to wait there for another half an hour before I actually got let back into the real game to continue my personal story.
Could you do us the service of telling us more about what the overflow service is, Fleur server is?
So I had no idea. Like, I'd kind of heard that they had this kind of process, but I had no idea what it entailed before I started the game. Basically, as soon as I booted in the game, like as soon as I got out of the initial, you know, introduction to the Char story kind of thing and put into the real world, it just came up with a message basically saying, yeah, the proper version of this area that you're trying to connect to on your server is like totally full. So now you're in an overflow server with everyone else waiting to get in.
It actually gives you a choice. Tell you,
it does, yeah. The first time? I don't think it
no,
did.
No. Every time you would be pushed into an overflow server, it asks you, do you wish to travel to the overflow server, or do you wish to wait until the server has space for you to get in?
Oh, yeah. And I guess most people match.
See,
I don't remember
I didn't
that.
See that.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember what that happened at all. To, for me is actually, it stuffed you in the overflow server, said, yo, you're in the overflow server. And then when I was ready to go back into the real world, it came up with a message saying, hey, would you like to go back in, or would you like to go to the back of the queue and wait again and finish whatever you're doing to go into the real server? So if you're in the middle of something, it just doesn't rip you out whilst you're partway through a quest or some world event.
And that's the best part.
You can still do everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can still do everything that you normally would in that zone. You just can't leave that zone until you know the queue's cleared up a bit.
Yeah, and like 99% of your progress, I did see some losses, but 99% of your progress is remains with your character. Like when you move to the actual proper server where you wanted to go in the first place, you still have done all those things that you did in the Overflow server in that area.
Well, the thing is, ArenaNet says that everything is saved anyway, even in the Overflow server.
For me, I experienced maybe about a 5-minute backtrack when I was transferred over.
I didn't notice anything particularly.
So that's the general idea of it. Essentially, given after the first time, I know the first time I wasn't really given the choice. It's like, oh, you're in the Overflow server, have fun. But net after that, you actually are. Yeah, I can confirm what Tarkin's saying. You're told beforehand whether you want to wait in the queue for the next server. For example, if you're leaving Holbrook, which is the Norn starting city, and you're moving out, and the actual other areas are too full, so you end up having to go to the Overflow server, you can choose to wait at the end of the queue, so you can keep walking around Holbrook, and it'll prompt you when you can go to the server, or you can just go straight to that area via Overflow. It actually does give you that.
I think I didn't have that choice because I was literally going straight from a instance, from the introduction tutorial instance, into the real world, and there was nowhere else for me to go because it was obviously the beginning of the game. And I think that's only something that you're really going to encounter where you're forced into the Overflow if, at the beginning of the game's life.
That's the only time you wouldn't be given the option.
Launch.
I think that's the case as well. And which is smart. Like, they shouldn't, even without, they do a poor job of explaining it, to be honest, in-game, again. But yes, it's good that they made that choice for you the first time through, and I think I got something very similar. There are a few issues with it. Like I've heard that partying up and trying to meet people across servers, like for example, they don't really give you too much indication when something's being. For example, when people move into servers, how many slots that are open? So say you have a party of about 8 or something along those lines, and you move into a server. And some of them actually are forced onto Overflow servers. And people have had that problem.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, and just like weird stuff happens. It doesn't really. I haven't experienced it myself, so I couldn't give you first-hand experience. But I think just something that the character names go black on the left side of the screen, and then just have no idea what's happening. And we went on.
That sounds like something that needs to be ironed out.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. But it's a really great idea. Future. I have to say, having no queues this entire weekend has been amazing an experience. I did not expect.
I think. It's been way smoother than I was expecting.
Yeah.
Like being able to log in, like in the first 2 hours, you know, pretty, like not with too much, resistance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was much better than I was expecting.
Yeah, and I have to say, like I went from, on my first playthrough in that Norn yesterday, in Australian time, I went through, main server to Overflow server to main server to Overflow server to main server, and then stayed on main server for a while. And then back to Overflow server for the last part of my Norn experience. And then at the very end, back to main server. And that entire time, there was like, what, eight or so transitions between servers was almost seamless. And it was spectacular. They nailed it on that one.
You have to remember, though, that it's very much an extension of what Guild Wars 1 had.
I guess.
With how every city had districts. And as they filled up, more districts would open up. And it was very seamless. Yeah, but instead of just being at major cities, it's for the entire game.
Which is
They brought it out to all the environments, which is clever.
That just blows me away. Like, the fact that they went, oh yeah, we'll just do that for the whole game, and then just did it, is amazing. I'm jaw-dropping to me. Especially with, well, I haven't had too much experience with WoW, but little experience I did have with WoW, I did have, like, server wait queues and all that kind of crap, and I hated it. And even when we started in Guild Wars, when, for example, factions came out, they didn't have server queues. It was a case where you just couldn't connect for hours after the game came out until finally maybe a position opened and you connect. I'm not sure if you remember. But anyway, how did you find your first couple of hours with the game, Shav?
As I said, I got in reasonably easily.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of messed around on my own for a little while, just sort of getting my bearings. The only real hiccup I had was the not wondering why I couldn't get through the gate into the Black Citadel.
So you started chilling there Char, for a long time. And did you do that first dungeon?
First dungeon?
Yeah, the little
No, what's that?
The little first instance where you go down and kill that big statue.
Oh, sorry, yeah, that dungeon, the little crypt thing. Yes, of course. Yeah, that was, it's interesting because I don't know why, but it seems like the char starting zone is the stuff that I've actually seen the most on like YouTube videos and stuff coming beforehand.
Yeah, maybe.
So I'd seen that fight with Baradin before. And when I did it, there was like so many people there. I just sort of kind of stood about spamming skills. You know, it was very non-existent tactics. It was just sort of beat the thing to death and it worked. And then I moved on to the outside area, which also I'd seen stuff like Total Biscuits videos. And I was like, oh, I immediately recognize this area. And actually, it's made me quite interested in seeing the other starting zones.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'd have to say... what would you say? I'd say there would be about maybe 2 hours of gameplay before you hit a major city or so.
Yeah, it depends really how much you're beelining your personal story. Because with the Char stuff, my personal stories had me do one quest in the outdoors area to start with, and then go towards the Black Citadel, the first major city for Char. You could quite easily ignore that and then just go off into the wilderness doing sort of the loyalty, the heart quest stuff, and world events quite easily. Like we were there when I joined you two on your Char run through. This morning, and we were there for quite some time, literally just doing all heart quests in that environment.
Yeah, and that was awesome. But before we get into that, Dragania and Taking, what do you guys think of Divinity? How long did it take the human guys to get to Divinity's Reach, and what do you guys think of Divinity's Reach?
It was really quick for me, I thought.
Okay.
I thought probably an hour, maybe less.
Did you do much in the way of
a bit of a blur.
Did you do much in the way of the optional side stuff?
Probably not, now that I think about it. I don't know, I didn't like I didn't make a beeline for Divinity's Reach. I just sort of stumbled into it, so
Okay, because you start off in, because I haven't seen it yet, you start off in the countryside, right?
Yeah, we start off but it's quite close,
right?
You start and off just outside Divinity's Reach. It's literally behind you, but
okay, right,
but you don't realize that unless you open up the map.
Oh, yeah.
Because for most people, the first thing you do is go down the road, which is heading away from Divinity's Reach.
All right, yeah, which is what you were saying earlier.
Yeah, but...
How long did it take you to get to Divinity's Reach? Like, how many things did you end up doing before?
I ended up doing about 3 of the dynamic events, and then I thought to myself, maybe I should do my personal story, which leads back to the major city in the first place.
Right.
So
okay, so, yeah, so I'd say in all of our cases, I think in... Human, Char, and definitely Norn. You're essentially led by if you follow the personal story instead of doing the side events, you do get to the city relatively quickly.
Within
about an hour. If you beeline, I'd agree with you guys. But what do you guys think of Divinity's Reach? You haven't answered that question yet.
Divinity's Reach is big. It's really
all big. The major cities are big, but
Black Citadel is really, really big.
I like the fact that they put those mini teleportation doors in.
Agreed.
That help you get around.
Mm. Great. Very, the cities are so big, they're
very
filled
handy,
with teleporters. Yeah.
Yeah, very
And they're
handy.
All free, thank God.
I love that.
They're only free if you're inside the city.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's weird that, because if you teleport to the outermost one, you would pay less, and then you could teleport to the innermost ones for, like, free and save yourself some money.
Like, a couple of
Thankfully, it's not much money, though.
Yeah. Thankfully.
But what do you guys think of the city? The art design, come on, guys. As if you guys don't have any
opinions
on that.
It is extremely majestic. It is like a castle built on a castle built on a castle.
Right.
It is just massive.
Yeah,
it was beautiful.
Yeah,
like,
that's pretty much what I said. Yeah,
the stonework is
really
absolutely
big.
Gorgeous.
There's a lot of areas. Also, the thing that makes Guild Wars 2 has jumping now, so you can climb on like a whole bunch of stuff and just go places that normally in Guild Wars 1 you couldn't go to. I think that kind of makes it seem like a bit bigger than it actually is.
Maybe
because you can go exploring pretty quickly and you go into all these little tiny nooks and crannies for no particular purpose, just to look at stuff.
Yeah, which I found myself doing. I didn't think I'd do it. I don't really do that for many games. Like really just walk around and just look at things.
Yeah, but the art in the game is quite especially for the cities is quite extraordinary.
I'd actually have to disagree with you in some cases. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. So I'll get into my first couple of hours with Guild Wars 2, and I have to say, the first being your leader is all like nice and stuff, but the fact that when I first I got in, we were sitting on Mumble, the guild Mumble, which is part of the Giant Bomb group. You were sitting there and going, oh, this is our boot Guild Wars 2, and listen to the opening music in prep. It was like an hour or so before the noon's time, which I stated had come out. And then suddenly he's like, oh, wait. Oh, dude, I totally logged in. And I was like, what? And then we just, like, it was a freaking bum rush to get into a Yak's Bend server. And we all just, like, got in there, made characters, and just sat at Yak's Bend, happy to get there before the major rush at 12 o'clock. But I have to say, like, the first about hour or 2 hours or so of me being in there, I was just doing stuff like, oh, how does making a guild work? Oh, how the hell do I add people to the guild? Then all tapping between Guild Wars and our beta roster, and just adding people and just following up people on Mumble to see if they wanted to be adding to the guild. And that's what I did for the first hour. It was perhaps the most underwhelming first hour of a video game in a long time. But essentially, after that, then I moved on to what I think I did that a lot of people didn't and kind of should have done. So I think that Chav would have the best experience with this, but the frame rates on Guild Wars 2 aren't spectacular. Thoughts?
No. Nope. Yeah, I agree, yeah.
At least
you notice
moment.
That.
Yeah.
I mean, Guild Wars 2, the, like, when I say art is spectacular, I mean, like, the designs are very nice, mm-hmm. especially for cities.
Yeah.
But it's not actually, like, a very graphics-intensive game in terms of, like, you know, polygons.
Yeah, you can tell everything's low poly. Like, it's just,
yeah, exactly, right. Well. It's, I mean, poly. As it should be. I mean,
yeah.
It's not, we're not playing Battlefield 3 here.
Yeah.
But even, like, I'm running dual, you know, a dual... sort of high-end, well, high-end for about a year ago, ATI cards, and they kind of, like, not exactly struggled, but there were times when they didn't, you know, the frame rates did get pretty crappy.
Yeah, they get choppy.
Yeah. And I'm not sure, actually, if this is, I mean, maybe when the game actually comes out, it'll be a bit better, because a lot of this is because, like, what I mentioned before, you know, during all the clusterfucks, when a single enemy will come out, there'll be like 10 guys just jumping on him using their, you know, using every skill they had.
Yeah.
And that would create issues, basically. I'm not sure if it's just because of that. Maybe, you know, I suspect that when the game actually does come out, that sort of issue won't exist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it will still exist, but not really as much.
Perhaps.
Maybe it just wasn't built to handle that many people doing stuff at the same time.
That's interesting, because unlike you two, I didn't have that frame rate problem except in extremely high density areas.
Exactly.
I'm seeing like 60 or more people on the screen at once.
Yeah, and then it just goes like
that's usually, yes, and that's usually a CPU problem.
I guess. Like, yeah, apparently with guys
not a graphics problem.
More about this kind of stuff than you guys do. Apparently it's currently CPU limited. But at the same time, not optimized for overclocked CPUs, if that makes sense to anyone.
I think, yeah, most of the stuff is loaded onto the CPU and the GPU is barely used at all, which is largely what the problems are.
Yeah, so essentially what's happening is it doesn't really matter what rig you have. If you're running Guild Wars 2, you generally are... You're not getting optimal performance. Like, at the moment, you're not getting more optimal performance. They haven't really gotten it to the point that they've... How do you say it? Optimized it for multiple forms of hardware. So essentially, if some people are getting fantastic performance, like, for example, me and Tarkin, with relatively old hardware, are getting fantastic performance. I mean, I'm getting buttery smooth visuals. But you, for example, Shav, what are you running on at the moment?
GTX 580 and an i7-950. And I get, like, 20 frames a second. So yeah, that makes no sense. And I'm running on medium, I should point out. So
maybe it's a driver issue. Are you guys running GeForce cards or ATI?
Well, I'm running a Jeep. I'm running on an overclocked i7 old school 920 at 3.4 gigahertz, but also just a freaking GDX 260 graphics card, NVIDIA GTX.
That's probably why you've got such good speeds. If you've got a fast processor, then you're probably all right.
Yeah, it's just very smooth. That could
be interesting to say, because I've got an overclocked Core i5-2500K. Overclocked to 4 gigahertz. Yeah. That's probably the fastest of any of us. And I still got...
Really?
Frame drops.
Well, frame drops did happen. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying, like, average, just moving through towns and moving through the outside world.
Once we got through a couple of hours after the beta
started, I did bring that. Like, the frame rate issues are basically done now.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. Like, the CPU loading was created by keeping track of what all the other players were doing. And once a couple of hours from the start of beta passed, and a lot of people either got disinterested or just left, then everyone experienced better performance, because there was lower server population in the end. But yeah, I'd say that. So back to the story, the second hour of me sitting in Guild Wars was just me moving through multiple graphics settings and trying to find one that went smoothly. Like, for example, I'm running off my card's easily capable of doing Mass Effect 3 at maximum settings at 1920. Mm. Sorry. Yeah, 1920 by 1020. So 1200p.
But Mass Effect 3 say that. Is clearly not a high performance.
Graphics are significantly better than this.
Yeah.
Significantly
but
better
you,
than this.
You know, I wonder if someone who actually knows something about the game and how it's, you know, programmed and stuff will call in and... Or not call in, but like will write in and say, you know, guys, you've got it all wrong. This is not how it works.
This is actually how it works, and this is why it's all fucked up at the moment. But in the end...
This is why it's broken.
I'm running it at 1650, with like medium to medium-low settings, but I'm getting excellent speeds. And I think a lot of people who have gotten on and complained about their graphics experience... And I wouldn't say that anyone here, but I'm sure you guys did try it out. But a lot of them, I bet... didn't just go, okay, I'll try running it at medium or lower settings, or I try running it at lower resolution, and just giving the game that much leeway and actually being able to say, okay, I'll give Arena a little bit more time to figure that shit out, and for now, I'll just experience the game. And a lot of people just rage quit after figuring out that their amazingly expensive PC couldn't run it at 60 frames a second.
I think that's because, you know, the graphics are not especially that high. When you compare it to other games, that they're thinking, if this game that is much harder on the graphics plays better, why is Guild Wars so terrible?
Exactly. Like, Battlefield 3 guys are definitely going, wait, what the hell is happening? Like, I run Battlefield 3 at max everything, and I get amazing everything, and why can't I do that here?
For me, it doesn't matter, because I played Guild Wars 1 on a laptop at 7 FPS, and it was fine, so I don't really know what people are complaining about. So running this at, like, 20 to 30 is more than enough, like, at medium. And the only reason I haven't changed it is because I've heard, for some people, like, changing the settings doesn't do anything for the frame rate.
And
like,
they actually
no matter
have
what
that.
You put
like,
it
if
on,
you
it's
look
exactly
at them,
the same.
Yeah, if you look at their... if you go to their forums and goes, known issues, and one of them is, like, straight up, graphic slider does nothing. Like, seriously, that's an issue? Really? Yep. Come on, guys. Or it has minimal effect, I think it was, though the actual wording was. And then resolution changes, I assume, if it's like something similar, a problem. I think they've been working on two similar machines set over there. And that's what a beta is for. Like, to be honest, beta's beta. This is the kind of shit that they want to fix before they put the game out. But yeah, so moving on from that, my first character was a Norn Necromancer, and I pretty much got in there and spent about an hour to two just wandering around. I didn't do events, well, I did some. I did the Leopard one, which was amazing. And then I moved on and did pretty much, I cleared out the main section of the first place you enter. I've forgotten the name of it when you become a Norn. So not Holbrecht, which is the main city, but the first little area. I pretty much cleaned that out, walked all the way through it, like spent an hour half an hour just killing random birds, like mower birds who are walking around through the forest and stuff to see how everything worked and get some weapon skills unlocked. I just walk up to it and little rabbits and stuff, I just walk up to it and kill it, like ferociously and as fast as possible just to get my timings down in terms of recharges. But I just like do that for an hour, and then I finally ended up getting to the dynamic events, And that's when everything took off, and the game went from, okay, this is me warming into it, to, okay, this is actually probably something I want to devote a lot of my time to. But those problems happened, like the cave with 50 people trying to rub off stuff from the wall. And but on the other side of things, you had amazing sequences, like there's a Raven quest, I think it's Raven, that you're walking up a steep mountain path, a curved mountain path, and there's like Raven statues on either side of the path, and they ask you riddles. And the riddles are awesome. And some of them, I didn't get any wrong, so I don't know what happens when you get them wrong, but they seem pretty easy, to be honest. But like stuff like that. I think for all the major dynamic events in the game, at least the ones I experienced, they're all consistently either interesting in that Arena didn't just go, okay, go to this area and kill everything. Not that those don't exist, but for a lot of them, you go in and say, okay, let's just do something different. Let's be a leopard for a while. Or let's feed fish to baby bears, for example. And I loved it. I'd say tentatively, I loved it. I loved pretty much everything I experienced from the starting areas of Guild Wars 2. How about you guys?
It's been okay. I mean, for me, I think everything's been kind of... nothing too exciting has happened, basically. But I haven't really gone much into the game yet. But yeah, everything seems pretty standard for me right now. I'm actually very interested into getting into PvP, which I'll be doing tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll see, though. It seems very, like, a lot different and a lot more interesting than Guild Wars 1. But, you know, I can't really make a judgment. But so far, PvE seems pretty standard to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like I said, you know, I haven't really gone much into the game yet.
Yeah, okay. And in Kale... Tarkin, go on.
Yeah, pretty much similar. I've liked the variety of dynamic events. Some of them are just very similar to old-style quest systems, but mm-hmm. a lot of them do try and change it in that you can finish things in multiple ways.
Yeah.
But what I experienced in one of the villages... in Kryta was just training.
What do you mean?
Because of how the combat system works, you're meant to pay a lot more attention to what enemies are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And one dynamic event is actually just training to recognize how enemies will be different, their animations will change when they're about to do something. And therefore, you should react to that. It might be as simple as just dodging training, but one of them was just attacking when they're no longer blocking.
Wait, so was this a formalized kind of thing? Like, what was the actual circumstance?
Oh, it's just entering a village, I think it's a town called Claypool.
Okay.
And right inside is a training area.
Oh, so there's actually like NPCs there and they tell you how everything works or like what?
Just the very basics.
Okay, and so they actually do tell you, and this is how you dodge, or this is the kind of things you need to look for, or
yeah. And if you failed, they gave you hints. You know, look for that little break in time to do something.
Wow, I would have loved to have something like that instead of practicing against moa birds for half an hour, like straight up. In the Northern area, you don't get. I think we've all experienced the same thing. When you get put into Guild Wars 2. You're left there, and then there's like little hints like, okay, the road you're standing on goes this direction, so maybe you should follow it. But there's no like quest marker. Is there a quest marker when you first?
No, there are quest markers. There are quests like indicators on your minimap.
Right. Yeah. There's the heart shape, and then there's because they've split up the quests into general dynamic events, which you find when you move through the world. Heart quests, which pretty much they're supposed to give you an idea of the backstory of the area you're currently in. So, like the Raven quest, the Bear quest, the Leopard quest, so on and so forth. Those are heart quests. Those are ones that will always be running in that area, will almost always be running in that area, and give you an idea of the culture, in that case, the spiritual animals of the Norn. But aside from those, you have the others, the side quests, which you just kind of run through, find And I guess that's kind of intuitive. Like you can, if you open the map as soon as you walk into the game, you can see the hearts around there. Maybe you want to check the map. And there's the green marker. I think you do get, in fact, when you first get in. But the green marker is one thing. But actually having someone there to tell you to go there, aside from like, because what they have is, at least in the non-starting areas, they try to do a lot in the way of open world voice acting, or like just character interactions between NPCs in the open world. So essentially what happens in the known area is you're walking up and the character goes, hey, talk to me, or something equivalent. And you talk to them and they go, oh, you should meet this guy here. And that's how your big grand adventure in Guild Wars 2 starts. But even then, like, that's not the same as, for example, in Guild Wars 1, where you straight up had quest, lines on your map, telling you exactly where to go, and this is what you should do for the first couple minutes. And I guess there's a bit of a beauty and subtlety to the fact that they don't do that, and they do let you go anywhere you want from as soon as you get in. But in my case, I was just kind of lost. I was going, holy shit, this world is huge. I can walk from this side of the map to that side of the map. It takes me like half an hour. And I've seen like 1,000 events on the way that I didn't even do it. I was just killing more birds, but I could have done them. And oh my God, I could have taken ages. It's interesting. What do you guys think? How much direction have you experienced? Do you want to see more direction in these games, or did you like how it was here?
I'm quite a fan of how it is, actually. Because with the story stuff, it gives you a strict direction. You know, it's got the green marker to find everything you want. And then everything else is kind of open. But I really like the way they've kind of organized all of the heart quests and the points of interest and the respawn points in each area as, like, collectibles. There's kind of the way it's displayed, like, every time you go into that era, you get a running total on your current progress on each of those individual things. You've got your overall world progress on each of those individual things. And it kind of makes it out like, oh, I want to go search out all these things. And in the process of doing so, I'll explore and find other cool things, like dynamic world events. And then also at the end, you know, collect the next heart quest and check another one off on your shopping list of quests.
Yeah, and it goes so deep.
Rather than just having a massive quest log, you know, because having a massive quest log, stuff can get buried.
And sucks.
But if you're just in an area and you're like, there's something over here, I'll go do it. Why not?
Mm.
The funny thing with this is that ArenaNet actually addressed this. They knew that it would be so open that some people would be lost. So they actually added in NPCs to help you. Those are the scouts that you, Cynic, were actually looking around with.
Added
the scouts to give you direction.
Yeah, and in fact, as soon as I spawned, there was actually a scout near there. I just didn't know what the hell it did when it first came into it. And I think the first NPC does actually say, hey, you should talk to this scout. But I didn't pay attention, to be honest.
Yeah.
I just ran off. Oh, yeah, I just wanted to try out these skills and
second NPC you meet tells you it is a scout right after you finish your prologue.
I think it goes, hey, go talk to these areas.
But I think all of us skipped that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we're like, hey, totally we want to get into the game.
Yeah.
Skip your...
It's like RTFM. It's the same thing. Like, people who think they know what they're doing, like us for this in this example, to kind of just skip what they really need to be doing to get into the game. And that's correct. And to go back to what Chad was saying, he actually is pretty much right on. He hit it on the head. Like, if you go into a map, just hitting the M key, on the top left-hand corner, you have not only the total for the area, and there's, like, a couple of things. There's the heart quests. There's, I think, the amount of waypoints you've unlocked, and there's the amount of points of interest. And points of interest aren't necessarily places where dynamic events start, but they could just be something as simple as a beautiful statue or a nice view. Like, for example, in Holbrack, there's a point of interest, which is just like a stairwell leading up to one of the main halls. And if you look up, you can just see how gigantic this hall they've built is. But in other ways, like if you do actually try to collect all of them by going from heart quest to heart quest, which is what we end up doing today, or going from point of interest to point of interest, you actually do end up not only seeing those things, but also seeing a bunch of dynamic events like along the way, which you can just get lost in. Like, you can just absolutely get lost in. And it gives you, like, an actual indicator of how close or how much stuff there's still left to do. Like, I think in one of the first starting areas, I've got, like, one of eight skill people, like the skill teachers, trainers, challenges.
Skill point.
Yeah, skill point. Skill, yeah. So that's the other one.
Yeah.
That's the fourth one.
And I didn't even know where the rest are. You can find them, like if you're walking around and they kind of brush up against the edge of where your perspective gives you. They pop up in your map, but unless you find all the scouts, and each they've had it such that each scout kind of gives you an indication where the next scout will be or where the next couple of scouts will be. So because what they do is, you talk to a scout, it brings you out to your overall map, and they kind of reveal an area which you haven't been to yet, and show you points of interest or mainly heart quests in that area, as well as scouts and perhaps a little financial center if there is one. And then covers it back up, but keeps the indicators on screen. That's how scouts work. And in many cases, the scouts actually link to more scouts. So you can actually, if you're smart, I guess, or if you actually do it how any internet wants you to, the first scout you talk to can essentially start you on your grand adventure. Like if you actually try to collect all the heart quests and so on, then you'll actually be able to experience as much as Guild Wars 2 as there is out there. And you can always track it. So when you hit the map key, you'll go, oh, you've done this much out of this much. Or in my case, oh, you still haven't done this. You should really do that. It's just how I read into it. And you can go back to areas from the past and try to do that stuff again. And I think that brings us to another major point about Guild Wars 2, level scaling. And do you guys have any particular... I can talk about it for ages, but what do you guys think about the current level scaling situation?
I don't have any problems with it. It's there to make sure that you're never too strong for an area.
Yeah.
And I've never had any problems with that.
I think it's amazing. I think it's fantastic.
It makes content relevant at all levels.
Yeah.
You still gain experience. You can still do it. And yeah.
Well, from my perspective, you still get your ass kicked. It's fantastic. Like things are still hard. It's great. Like I went back to that first starting area after a while in Holbrook, and I was what, level 9 and top dog. Went back there, boom, back to level 5. Hey, I woke up to a Moberbird. It's challenging. I almost got killed by an elk. I think it was. It was great. I loved it. And it's a case where so essentially you have the starting areas and the attached areas, and all of them have. I believe level boundaries where they think you should be in that area. And if you're over level for that area, they kind of pretty much chop you down, scale you down to the top of the level boundary. So they don't put you in the middle. They don't kick you down that far, but they put you at the top. So if in level 5 area, you generally scale down to level 5. So I was going from 9 to 5. And so enemies continue to be difficult. Going back to old dynamic events you haven't done still become, like, they're still challenging. In some cases, a bit too challenging, I would say. Balance isn't quite there in beta, especially in the char area.
What I find problematic with this is that whole areas have, like, the entire human area or the entire char starting areas have one massive level range of around 1 to 15 for char and 1 to 17 for humans. But each section in that area is actually split up.
Yeah.
So you will run into enemies far higher level than you very quickly.
Oh, man. And it was terrifying. Yeah. We were like level 2 and there was a level 5 over there and we didn't even survive the first hit. It was crazy. It was nuts. We just got decimated and it was fun. I think it was fun. I thought it was fun.
Because one amusing anecdote I have is just after starting, after the beta started.
This is in the humans area?
Yes, for the human area, yes. I was running through a bandit cave. I was level 3. And the bandits were around level 4. Not too bad, right? But I eventually ran out to the end of the cave. What faced me were 3 level 8 grubs. And I thought, grubs? Grubs are weak. But wait, they're level 8. Let's try and fight them. Oh no, their flame breath hits me for almost my entire health bar.
Like one hits, yeah. But that bandit cave, didn't you have your buddy with you?
No, this is not the personal storyline.
Alright.
This is out in the wilds. So and you just if you go past the slugs, you fight level 10 bandits.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think Okay, so essentially, to revise the statement, you have the overall areas, which are split into like level ranges, and then just by walking through that area, you can actually get to another spot which has a sub-level range. So the first space you spawn in is actually, I think it was like level 1 to 3. And if you're level 5 and you walk into the very first spot, if you stand in the same spot you were in when you first spawned into the game, you're scaled down to level 3. But if you walk about 5 minutes in one direction, that scaling could go up to, say, 3 to 5. So you'll be scaled up to 5. If your character is level 10, you'll be set to level 5. So you can have situations where, for an overlevel character, it's fine. You're moving from a level 3 area, and just by taking one turn, you can actually find yourself in a level 9 area. And that's actually really great, the fact that you can do that. But for a level 3 character, who turns a fucking corner and finds a level 9 dude, it's a bad experience. It's an interesting experience, like for the char starting area, which is what we did today. And Tarkin. Sorry, were you going to say anything?
I just said yeah.
Yeah. Me and Tarkin pretty much, they say, oh, hey, you're new to the Char Legion. Hey, how about you help us with a bunch of this stuff? And they point you over to this giant plains with a bunch of heart quests along the way. And we're like, oh, we'll just take this route to the heart quests, maybe go. It could pretty much forms an S route, and we can probably just do them and get them out of the way, and it could be fun and see what happens. So we end up doing a heart quest, which is adjoins an area which goes from level 1 to 3, which is what we were at the time, to a level 5 to 7, I think it was. And one boss from that area had been lured down to where we were playing with our little level 3 drakes and killing them and having fun. And it was just a sea of corpses. It was like literally a sea of corpses. It was a single NPC enemy, and around it was about 10 to 15, maybe even 20 dead level 3s, all trying to take down this one boss.
I came over and everything was good.
Yeah, you were level 6 or something, weren't you? Or level 4.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
I'd already done that bit, so I was 6 or something.
Yeah. So I would say that the moral of that would be, it's great that they do it. I think it's kind of cool that if you go back to a level 6 area as a level 80, for example, you'd be level 6 and it's challenging. But there's no real good indication as to where each is. That's like really paying attention. I think the map does say it somewhere in there, but I don't think it's like you can totally find yourself. Like, it's pretty much a Dark Souls kind of thing, if anyone's played that. You head down the wrong staircase and suddenly you shouldn't be here. You get the kind of same thing in Guild Wars 2, which some people enjoy, but I can see a lot of people finding a gripe with that.
They actually do give warning, because each event is marked with a level number next to it.
Yeah, you're right.
And if that's red, it means it's above your level. But it's such a subtle thing.
Yeah, unlike a quest, like, you can't go, okay, I won't take this quest right now. Events just happen. Like, you can literally turn a corner, there'll be a boss there. That could happen. Which will bring me to, what was your favorite little experience of the last couple of days? At least
I was hoping you'd do this feature.
Yeah, because I have one. I have an awesome one, and I'll do mine last. But yeah, so what do you guys most enjoy over the beta experience? And probably be wrapping this up after this. So, final thoughts, and what do you guys most enjoy? Starting with anyone, I'm going to point towards Shav.
I have two to choose from.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what yours is going to be, and it might be one of them.
Oh no, you went there for my one, sir.
Okay, cool. So one of my favorite moments was, I can't remember which one of you two it was now, but when we were chilling out in the earliest char zone, looking over the edge of that that ledge down into the little village area with all like the shops and whatnot, and one of you two said, "Do you reckon I can make this jump?" and what the other one? I can't remember.
That was me. That was the second.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was. We were. I had all my armor was broken. At this point, we just did that little moment with the level 5 dude in level 3 area, And essentially, I died so many times that all my armor was broken. And I was like, okay, guys, I really have to go back to town. Because I'm doomed here. I can't explore like this. So I went back to town, and we walked up to the only warping area that we'd unlocked in the town. There are others closer to the place we wanted to go, but that one. So there's an armor repairer in the bottom floor, and if you go towards it from the warping area, you can either be a smart person and take the stairs, or be a dumbass like me and go, hey, how about I get off this ledge and just jump down?
But before Cynic could do that, I, having experience with jumping, thinking, hey, you only take some damage, but not all of your health,
said... Yeah, you very confidently said, you can't die. You will take damage, a lot of damage, but you cannot die.
Yes.
So he promptly walks off the fucking edge. While I'm there, well, I went up to it backwards. I went up to the edge and I looked over the edge. Like, okay, this is probably pretty far. Maybe I can die. So I walked around the edge. There's this little like adjustment that moved out from it. It's probably about 90% down. So only 10% down from me towards the earth, right? So I like line myself up with that. I turn around backwards so that I can, you know, get some air control going. And this jackass just kind of just walks off the edge next to me, plummets, and okay, so he walks off the edge. I walk off the edge slightly after. I hit that adjustment.
I just see both of you fall off. I don't even know what's gonna happen.
And then slide down, and before I hit the ground, I just hear laughter coming from Chav. I touch down. I'm on like 10 health. I'm like, oh, turn around, there's a corpse. Just fantastic. Like, Tarkin walks off the edge, smacks into the ground, dies. I walk off the edge, hit that adjustment, 90% down, and go off the edge. I think it was only like 8 health difference or something like that.
It was the abetting thing. It's so funny.
To put out how close this was, my character had 452 health. Jumping off the ledge dealt 459 damage.
And my mind was something very close to there, but because I hit that adjustment first, I totally survived. It was fantastic.
And it was
so awesome. That was your first. Really what was your second? Would you say, Chav?
The second one has to be Bartender Char name.
Okay, now I'll let you set this up. Tell them the story.
My favorite NPC in the game. So when I was doing my personal quest stuff and going into the Black Citadel. There's a district. It's not the first district you enter. It's sort of north of the instance that you go into if you're doing your Char storyline. It's just above that where there's a bunch of armor shops and there's a bank and some other stuff.
Yeah.
And in the middle of it, there's just this bar. And you go in there, and then behind the bar is a bartender. And you think, oh, I'll go talk to the bartender, see what's up. The bartender's name is double open brackets, bartender, and then in all caps, Char name. And then double close brackets. And I thought that was kind of weird. And I was like, yeah, this doesn't seem right. So I then went and talked to him. And his dialogue was double open brackets, general discussion about rumors and tips will go here. Double close brackets. And the only dialogue choice was temp. And that just rounded it off.
Now, what makes this more funny is it's not char name as in character name. It's
no,
char name as in... The race, Char, name.
Char.
And you see this little milling crowd. When he brought us back there, there's a little milling crowd of people just talking to him. And you get just the sense that people just laugh, like, screenshot. Vincent, did you screen cap it? I think everyone screen capped it.
Yes, I think I did. Put one on Giant Bomb last night when I saw it first. I was like, oh man, this is too good.
Okay, so those are your two. And Tarkin, do you have one?
Not so much funny, but an awesome moment. Just traveling along by myself, facing too many enemies.
Was this when you're human, or?
Yes, I was a human guardian. At that point, I was facing some bandits, level 10 while I was level 8. And I was thinking, yeah, one bandit should be fine. I ended up bringing about 4 bandits on me. That quickly killed me. But it was part of a skill... skill point challenge. So I wanted it. And as soon as I went down, 4 more players came in, brought me back up, and we absolutely obliterated the bandits, got the skill point.
Hell yeah. MMOs, right? How awesome are they? And is Draganium?
See, I don't have anything like that, because I've been kind of been by myself. I mean, none of my guildies are around.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are all in freaking Yak Spin.
Where are you at the moment? Yeah, you're in Yak Spin now, aren't you? Oh, you're still in
Kynning. No, I'm still in Kynning.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was just wandering by myself. I had this, doing my personal quest, there was this one sub part of this of the main quest where I had to go kill some catapults that were guarded by roughly a billion centaurs, and me being by myself.
Yeah.
Right? I had two seraphs with me, two seraph guards, and I think there was like maybe 15 or 16 centaurs, all level 6, and I was only like level 4 at the time or something. I decided to do the quest before I was ready. More for me, but, you know, and then I'm like, you know, they don't seem very well spaced, so I ended up sending an illusion to aggro each individual one. Because if you aggro them, they'll kind of like charge you, especially the warriors have this charge move.
Yeah.
They'll bring them within aggro range in you, and then they'll just come up trotting by themselves. And then I repeated that process for pretty much the entire group.
Whoa.
And somehow made it out.
That's pretty badass.
Somehow made it out.
That is pretty badass. I have to give you applause on that one.
Yeah, Mesmer's rock.
Mine was so awesome that I wrote it down, and so awesome that I wrote it down poorly so I can barely bloody read my writing. So the place is called, I think it's Frozenwell or Frozenfell Creek. If you actually head up in the Norn starting area, as soon as you, like, from this place you start, not Holbrook, but before there, and you head north. I don't know the actual starting area's name, but if you head north of there, you eventually get to hit a spot for level 10s and 11s. I'd say you probably need to be around there. Called Frozenfell Creek. And it started off as an innocuous, like, quest. I essentially moved from
pretty much a small quest where we're extorting a caravan and you just be fighting random dudes. And finally, I just broke off from there because the dynamic event wasn't really figured out properly. So they actually repeated every 5 minutes instead of like every hour or so. So I just got bored of it and I walked off in a different direction. And I found myself at a place called, let me see if I can find it, Hunter's Lake. Excuse me, I'm just going to cough. So Hunter's Lake. So you're there, and then I was just like talking to some NPCs, and I had a little dynamic event marking go, oh, this guy is going to just escort this guy to investigate the Grawl in the area, and the Grawl are these monkey people. So essentially, I go, oh yeah, why not? I'm bored, I have nothing better to do, and I follow the guy down. It's just me, and no one else is in the area, and I escort him close to the Grawl. At that point, I didn't really realize that I'm level 10, and all these Grawl are level 11 or so. And it's like little pockets of 5 each. So I take out the first 5, barely survive. These other, like a group of other people, maybe like 2 or 3, walk in from off screen and essentially pull another group of 5, and I die. So, okay, fine, whatever. I'll meet up with them. We'll try and get the area done. It's a stupid dynamic event. I kind of want to see it. Maybe I'm sort of interested in seeing how this plays out. Maybe in investigating the Grawl, he'll find something interesting. So I move back over, and the 2 had become 4. And essentially, I joined this group of, like, slowly expanding group. Well, at that point, not really. So it stayed us 4. We joined up, we cleared the area of Grawl, and finally we find the statue. So the guy who's investigating the statue goes, oh, this is to do with the dragon in the area, because that's what Guild Wars 2 is actually about, these big dragons. This is a statue for him. How about you guys destroy it, because we can't have the dragon taking over the Grawl in the area. And at that point, I was like, okay, fine. It's just one more thing. I'll just destroy the statue, whatever. So I destroy the statue. I help them destroy the statue. And this has way too much health. I'm just thinking, like, why does this statue have this much health? We're taking it down. It takes us like 5 minutes to get it down to half health, right? After that 5 minutes, we're bored. We're just sitting there letting it auto-attack at that point because we couldn't even bother using skills. And unbeknownst to us, about 40, maybe not 25 to 40 enemies had spawned, not directly behind us, but like off-screen, maybe like maybe 1.5 screens away, entirely surrounding our position, right? So we're standing there, we're working on this, and I was like just moving my mouse across, and I'm like, and I just pause. I'm like, wait. No, this isn't happening. And then one of them starts walking our direction. And I'm like, oh shit. So I start running. I stop attacking the statue, and I start running back to town as fast as I can, and I get frozen, and I get killed. And by this time, everyone starts freaking out because I see that all these enemies are about level 12, so two levels above us. And they start running away as well. And everyone wipes. Well, they're not a party or anything, but everyone wipes. And you can see all these corpses littering the battlefield. So at that point, I'm like, okay, screw this. I couldn't be bothered. I'm not going to go back there and fight those, like, thing. It was like 40 at minimum enemies way above our level. So I respawn, they start walking off. But then I realized that the dynamic event in that case is actually a string. So the first part of that string was escorting that guy to investigate the ruins, or to investigate the statue in the end. The second part of that string is destroying the statue, and which actually could potentially free up that area and therefore have other parts of the string. And I wanted to see what could happen if we destroy that statue. So I turned around and I saw that those four other guys had actually formed a little bit of a resistance. They'd actually, they quartered off like a very small group of their 40, I think it was like maybe two or three, were pulling them over and killing them, and then slowly working their way around the circle. So I joined them, and it was actually pretty interesting. And they were more powerful than us, but we slowly took them out and worked around the circle. And by the end of that, there was maybe, and at that point, more people joined. There was about 10 of us. So 10 of us are standing there, and we finish off the statue. We're all standing there again. It takes less time, obviously, to take it to zero because I'm already on half. You kill the statue. Great. Everyone's happy. So we start walking away and dispersing because I'm not sure if you guys have experienced this, but when doing a dynamic event, people just, and it's hard, people just tend to come together, do it, and then leave. Right? And that's kind of the general ebb and flow of things because everyone wants to do their own thing. So we start dispersing, and then a single NPC, like a single red-colored NPC, walks up to the statue, and a giant tornado appears. Like a huge tornado around him, and everyone gets blown away, and half of us die. And it turns out this one enemy is actually like a ultimate champion death god thing. And he spawns, again, a giant group of enemies. So we're like, okay, this could be cool. Maybe it's a boss fight. We try fighting that dude, but he's invulnerable. Apparently, we have to kill every other enemy in the area to actually get to him. So we do that. We kill every enemy in the area. And eventually gets to the point where we're finally fighting this boss. And remember, we're level 10. Like, this all has happened, and we're only level 10. I've been barely playing the game for about 3 hours of actual gameplay after setting up the guild and all the other stuff. So we're there. We're pounding away at him. And then suddenly the game changes. Like, he stops being invulnerable because we killed everyone else in the area. And we're fighting on a giant ice lake. So all these red circles appear in the ground. And we're standing there fighting him. And suddenly these little spouts of tornado start forming. And suddenly across the entire lake, there's either giant ice falls that do 600 damage. And I think we only have like 700 to 1,000 health. Or have a giant like AoE effect tornado. And those don't just stay still. They don't just happen then go away. They're continually shifting around this giant ice lake. So we're in a situation where a bunch of level 10s who barely played Guild Wars 2 were in an incredibly difficult boss fight with a boss about 3 or 4 levels our superior in an ever-changing battlefield, having to kite around the boss, staying between area effect fields, and getting that working. And we get wiped. we could not keep up with it. Like, he was doing, if he walked up to you, he'd do about 2,000 damage. If you get stuck in one of those area effect fields, you'd either take about 300 if it's a tornado, or about 1,000 if it's an ice drop. So you'd just insta-gib. So you'd have situations where people were trying to res one another and get insta-gibbed by the boss or by another semi-intersecting area effect field or two intersecting area effect fields and just get insta-gibbed. So we respawn, and by that point, we're like, fuck it, I have the moxie to take on this boss. So we rush the area. And at this point, a second group of players, so another about 10 players, join us. So now you have 20 players fighting this boss, all level 10, right, on this giant ice field, again, still tornadoes and all the other crap happening, fighting this boss. And then, so you have that situation where everyone's trying to keep everyone else alive, everyone's trying to stay in the middle of area effect fields, but it's getting harder. Like, not many people realize this, but bosses in Guild Wars 2 scale. So the more people who come along, the harder the boss gets, and the more damage he does, and the more interesting the effects get, or the more damaging the effects get themselves, and the more fast the effects move across the battlefield. So you have this, like, dance happening because people couldn't really squeeze into the areas between area effect fields, where people were, like, shoving each other around, trying to get around the boss, kind of damage the boss, moving within area effect fields, and just generally try to kill him. And he gets to 50% health, and he transforms. He goes from a dude to this giant ice golem. And I was like, oh god. Oh god. If he goes back to max health, I'm quitting. But he didn't, thankfully. So at that point, we all wipe again. He becomes more powerful. There's more area effect fields. Everyone wipes. 20 people wipe on the spot. So everyone's like, okay, no. We have to keep going. We have to do this. We have to take him out. This is going to be awesome. So we get up. Everyone gets up. Goes back there. And another group of 10 people arrive. And another. 40 people. It was 40 people, all level 10, fighting this boss. It took us about... The whole experience took us about 45 minutes to take him down. It was as... Like, we thought the char area was a sea of corpses at level 3. This was a literal lake of corpses. It was... About at any given moment, half the people, maybe three quarters of the people, would be dead, lying there, taken out by the area effect fields of the boss itself. And this was all level 10. And that was the most amazing experience. At that point, I quit playing my Norn character because I knew I couldn't top it. It was fantastic. And that's why I started playing Char today.
Did you get some good loot?
No. I got a bronze medal. I wiped like 12 times. Yeah, it was spectacular. And on that note, I just to repeat, that would be, I think it was Frozenfell Creek or Frozenfell Creek. Just above the Norn starting area. If you can head there, either in this beta event or the next one, I very much, very much recommend that particular event if you can find it or trigger it. But aside from that, does anyone have any closing thoughts?
I can't wait to get into PvP tomorrow.
Oh yeah, definitely.
We'll see how that goes. I mean,
are any of you guys going to try... Sorry.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, are any of you guys planning on trying World v. World as opposed to PvP? Because I'm not too huge on straight PvP, but I think World v. World might be an angle that I could come at PvP from and be more interested in.
I think we're going to do both, yeah.
Yeah, I'll probably try both. I'm more interested in PvP. Back when, you know, Guild Wars 1... We were still Guild Wars 1. We were pretty much only PvP, like GVG, organized PvP. So looking to recreate that sort of same feel. I'm not sure if I'll get it, but, you know, can't wait to try.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go 50-50. Probably half of tomorrow on War vs. World, and they'll have instructed.
I'll give it a go.
Yeah, it could be awesome. I've heard good things. Tarkin?
Environment stuff is my personal... interest.
Sorry, what was that?
PvE.
Oh, right, yeah, okay. Yeah, the environment stuff. Gotcha. Mm. Are you going to continue with your char, or are you going to try something else? I'd actually recommend trying, like, a different race.
I probably should try something else, but I don't know, I do get fixated on one, you know, one thing.
Right.
So, we shall see.
Yeah, so you've only got that double, I think it was 11 char? Something like that?
Yeah, I only ever ended up making two characters in like almost 200 hours of Guild Wars 1.
Whoa!
I invest in one character as much as possible, really. So.
Are you going to make a new character, Dragonia?
Look, probably not. I'll probably make a few ones, but I'll never like go past, you know, the first couple of quests probably.
No, I mean like for PvP.
I tend to get fixated on one character as well.
So you're going to be Mesmer in PvP as well?
Pretty much, yeah.
For some reason, I'm not surprised. Yeah,
until I get the hang of it. I mean, like, as a Mesmer, you tend to have to know... Well, back in Guild Wars anyway, you tend to have to know how all the other classes work. So, mm-hmm. I'll be kind of researching on that a little bit. But I don't think I'll have time during this beta weekend, to be honest.
Yeah. But But so you're gonna just stick with that character?
Yeah, probably just a mesmer, yeah.
And Tarkin, what are your plans for tomorrow?
I'll probably make a new character just to get a little bit more experience other professions or races.
What are you interested in playing?
Well, I've already got a human and a char, so I think I'll play a Norn.
Mm-hmm.
Profession-wise, I'm not sure yet.
Because you've played a
Guardian and a Ranger.
Yeah, Ranger.
So I'll probably move to maybe an Elementalist.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I really want to try Ellie.
Yeah, no one played an Elementalist. I find that quite odd.
Well, Ellie's going to be the second character I make when I get to the actual game, when the game releases. So, and this weekend I pretty much went, okay, I'm going to play the stuff I don't think I'll find awesome when the game came out. So I was never planning to play Char, but this weekend totally converted me. I love the Char now. Not as much as I love the humans, but I'll play a Char now. And the same with Necromancer. Like, I wasn't particularly interested in Necromancer. I thought Guardian and Warrior would be my thing. And yeah, so I played Necromancer this time through, and it was pretty good.
If I make another character, it'll be an Engineer, I think, but I don't know what race.
Cool.
I'd really like to do like Silvari or something.
Oh. Well,
but that's not there, obviously.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Silvari aren't around in the beta, though.
Yeah. Oh man, I think both me and same with Asura. I really want to make an Asura. I love those little dudes.
Asuras just seem like tiny righteous dicks.
Yeah, exactly. Damn straight. And that sounds right up my alley, to be honest. But yeah, that's great. So that's what we're going to be doing. Hopefully you'll see us online. If not in this beta, the next one, you can join us on the Mumble channel. Just check out giantbomb.com and look for the forums of the Guild Wars 2 forum. You'll find the information on the Guild and who we are, what we do, and what we're doing in Vita. But thanks for listening. And this is Self-Conspiracy City signing out. I'll let you guys sign out on your own.
This is Dragania signing out.
All right.
Okay. I think we're all done.
Too late for the rest of you.
I'd
cool.
already left. So sorry. This is Chad the World saying goodbye.
Do you guys have any Twitter? Do you want to advertise yourselves in any way?
No.
Okay, cool.
Not me.
You can check me out on my other podcast, The Mighty Electronic Box. We're on iTunes.
Cool. Hey, a plug on our first episode. That's cool. Yep. I'm good with that. That's great, actually.
Thank you for letting me do that.
No, that's probably... and Tarkin? No? Okay.
He genuinely left.
We've been doing this for an hour and 50... I said maybe half an hour to an hour. It is now an hour and 51.
Yeah, you're a liar.
I am a liar and a cheat. But,
it's been like almost 2 hours now.
But yes, and I would say that would be goodbye. Thanks for joining us, and maybe we'll do another one of these. Bye.
Bye.